What's going on?
Hello, hello. DJ, turn me up. What's going on, man?
How's it going, Daniel?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Today's been going all right.
What's up? Cool. So, welcome to an episode of Eagle and a Pirate, man. We have a special guest. Daniel, you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Spada. I'm a Salvadorian from Los Angeles, California. That pretty much describes you, man. That's it.
I wasn't trying to give like a racial bio. All right, yeah. What village is your mother from? What hood you rap? Hey, I mean, man. In your intro, man, you're more than welcome to include your profession and, you know, background. You know, today, you know, before I let you redo your introduction again, just want to give people a heads up. It's going to be just me and Daniel today on the podcast. We're going to be reviewing episode or just discussing episode number 9 of The Last Dance. Cordae will join us for episode 10, the finale. You know, I promised that we're going to discuss some overall things about it and also whether or not it's a good documentary or not. So stay tuned for that. As for this episode, you know, Daniel, I'm giving you one good chance, man. Redo your intro.
All right. So my name is Daniel. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I'm currently a teacher, just graduated grad school, got my master's in education, and I'm an aspiring NBA athlete. You know, ever since my ACL tear back in the day, I just haven't been able to get over the hump, you know?
I mean, you know, you did hoop. You did hoop in high school, man. So, you know, much power to that.
There it is, man.
So give us a little background of your hoop. What position you play? Man. Did you get any burn? How much you points average?
I like to think of myself in like my high school career, kind of very similar to Jordan, you know, very like first couple years, it was all right, you know, got my burn coming off the bench, you know, then junior year, senior year, that's when I really started to pop off, come into my own, you know, but senior year, my trophy's in the high school right now, you know, hanging right there.
Well, what's nice. The trophy about?
First place, champions, you know how it is.
First place of what? Let's get it. Is it league? Is it, you know, first place in a free throw concert? Contest.
All right, man. Check this out. Look, so we weren't quite CIF yet, so we had our own, like, tournament with little schools in the area, like local high schools. That's what it was, though. It was no, like, CIF. We weren't playing top tier basketball players, but you know, at the end of the day, we got that chip. That's what matters. Doesn't matter who was against.
Okay, I like it. So you played. You know, I know this as background information, but you played point guard, right?
Yeah. I played point guard, and you know, in a school where like the majority of people are Latino, Latinos aren't very tall. I was one of the taller ones, so people were like, why are you playing point guard? But, you know, it's just, I grew up watching Steve Nash. That was my boy. Then I just picked up a lot from him. So, like, my number one thing was facilitating, putting people in good spots, making the game easy for them. You know, that's just what it was. I loved doing it. I never liked playing the big man position. The wings weren't for me. I like handling the ball. So that's where it all came from. People finally started like realizing like, oh, he could handle a little bit, you know? That's when I started playing point guard.
Hey, so what was your best statistical game? You know, we always talk about accolades and, you know, I know it's a team sport, but just, you know.
Hey, 12-8-2. You got 12 points, 8 assists, 2 rebounds. That was my best game. That's nothing to brag about, but you know, It's honest work. It's honest work.
And that's accurate because, you know, sometimes they get like the parent volunteers or like the newscasters or whatever the guys doing the local games. They be, you know, missing a couple plays here and there. So that's as accurate as it was.
That's as accurate as it can get, man. It's like, if I wanted to lie, I would have said I was dropping like 20 and 10, you know? But I'm going to be honest, my best game was probably like 12 and 8. I was nothing special.
But, I mean, yeah, you guys were probably scoring like 40 points, 50 points a game, so
in the smaller league.
So, yeah.
That's big facts.
Yeah, man, I mean, I played a little summer league myself. A couple summers in a row, you know.
I played pickup with you. You're a little bit of a 90s type defender. Like you just get physical.
That's what I prided myself in, you know.
You play like a football player.
I'll tell you this. I try to be a nuisance. I try to make your game terrible. Like, if I can't make any shots because I'm terrible at shooting, that means you for sure ain't going to get no shots off. So that's my playing style. You know, I wasn't the best shooter when my best statistical game came into practice.
Yeah.
I think in practice, I went off one day, and I think I scored maybe like 20 points. And I think everybody else was fatigued or something, or it was like an extra long practice because we would run practice with like five different teams,
yeah,
all in the same facility. You know, it was one of those hoops or areas where it's like trying to maximize space. So it's like it literally had no. It's like one long. It's just one regular court, but they just have like on the wings on the sides of it. They just have extra baskets.
Yeah, I feel
you. So that's how it was. We would run like tournament style sometimes at practice, and I just went off. I remember, and I just did all straight layups because I guess I was so bigger than everybody else. No one wanted to get in my way, so I'm like, shit. Oh, and I think the most daring shot I took was just like almost a 3-point. I just launched it and it went in, and I was just like, well, I guess I'm like 1 for 20 now.
Nope. Did the Steph Curry shimmy, you know? Just
yeah. But in regular games, I think the most points I scored was probably just like 8, 6, 4.
Oh no, I feel it, man. I was low scoring.
But I was kind of like the Dennis Rodman though. I would just get hella rebounds and a couple fouls.
Hey man, it's just like we do the things that don't appear on the stat sheets. You know, that extra motivation, leadership, that's what it is, you know, that like extra, yeah, extra pass, you know, it don't come out on the stat sheet, it don't get the numbers on social media or nothing, but we are what leads to winning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are the Steve Kerrs and the Horace Grants of this whole situation.
I remember, tell you this, one of the seasons I played with this guy, who was like a pretty slick, cool, like point guard. He had moves. The thing is, like, he just wouldn't come to practice. Mm. And I think that summer, like, it was like two or three practices a week, and then games were on Fridays. And I think the whole season, I think this season lasted maybe like 2 months, all summer. I swear this guy came to practice like 5 times, 6 times. But he would come to all the games. So they'll throw him in automatically at point guard because, you know, he was better than all the other point guards.
Yeah.
So he would come in and he would do some sort of like – he would give me the eye signal and I'm just like, I don't know what you want me to do. So I would just stay there and then they'll like snatch the ball from him. Or he would like do – like he would drive in. And then last second, he would dish it out to me in the perimeter. And then it would just, like, hit my head or, like, hit my hands or shoulders. Because, you know, we never practiced on you know, chemistry or anything like that, you know? Like, those are the kind of things that you practice with someone, right?
Yeah.
So I remember
practice?
Yeah, I remember they hit a fast break because he drove in and he launched it to me. Shit went over my head, and then they went ahead and scored. And I was just like, damn, dude, like, I'm pretty sure my parents and all the other parents that were in the stands like, yo, this guy sucks. But it's in reality, like, you know, this point guard's pretty good. It's just, we never really play together, so.
Yeah, it was like, I didn't know he was going to swing it out to me.
Yeah, like, and he would go for those very, like, you know, what is it called? Like, when wide receivers in football go for, like, those one-hand catches nonstop. He would try to go for, like, those, like, you know, highlight plays. And I'm just like, bro, I'm not going to, you know, I can't do it.
Was he the type of player that just, like, did everything extra, you know? It's like there's no one around you guys, but even when he passes it, it has to be, like, something fancy. You know what I mean? Just, like, one-handed pass to you, even though nobody's around.
Yeah, like, that was pretty much what he, like I said, he was good. He was flashy. It's just, you know, and then when we did play games, he would put basically the whole team on his back. But, you know, I think you could have avoided that if you actually, you know, came to practice and, you know, was there sweating with the other dudes and getting the chemistry down and the shots, you know? So,
yeah.
But I get it. It's you know, it's summer league. It's not like, you know, you probably out there doing fun beach stuff and, like, going on joyrides and stuff. Like, I got to go to practice, you know? I'm not going to practice. But yeah, man. Let's get back on the topic, man. Which topic of the episode is just episode 9?
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it, man. So, starting off with the episode, it's talking about Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller's relationship with Jordan.
Mm-hmm. With Black Jesus.
Black Jesus. Mm-hmm. He tried to show off on him, and you know, like that reoccurring theme that we see, you say anything, you cough in front of Jordan, he's gonna take it personal and he's just gonna destroy you.
Yeah, it's like one of the things that you just hear, you're just like, damn, it's so crazy. Why would anybody even talk to Jordan? Like, because they know, like, he about to drop like 40 on him for just looking at him, you know?
Yeah.
It was like that one story they told earlier on in the doc where he made up a story in his head where the guy said, like, oh, good game, after he dropped, like, 30 points on him. Then the next time he saw him, he, like, went ham on him, went hard in the paint. Like, that's just the wild thing about Jordan, man. It's just, you can't say anything to him or else he's just going to go off.
Yeah, they were discussing those Indiana Pacers teams, man. For some reason, mm-hmm. I don't know what the Indiana was doing, but it seems like they were grooming their whole squad to just be like TNT commentators, because that's all they have on their whole squad, you know?
They got Reggie Miller, Jalen Rose.
Yeah. Mark Jackson. Like,
oh, my goodness.
You know, Chris Mullin, they all had them to be like front office people. And then they had Larry Bird as the head coach.
Oh my gosh, man.
Right? So
that was Jordan's like first like in your face to Larry Bird, huh? In the playoffs. It's just like that's where he came up, or that's where he like came up to him and said, what was the line?
He was like, you little bitch, fuck you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he was like, enjoy yourself, dog.
Yeah, it's funny, like, what kind of relationship do you carry with people where you can just say that to some? You know what I mean? Like, if someone came up to me, I'd be like, the fuck's wrong with you? Don't talk to me like that, you know? But do you think people
especially
get a pass?
In the 90s?
Do you think people get a pass because he's Jordan? Or, like, how the hell are you talking? You know, it's not like that's your peer, right?
Yeah.
That's another head coach.
Yeah, and Larry Bird was the type to just pop off on anybody. He'd, like, square up as soon as anybody tried to, like, mess with him. So I guess that was just probably the relationship they had.
And yeah.
I guess at the end of the day, I think Bird said it best. He's like, oh, okay. The only time you beat me is when I wasn't suited up or something like that, something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
And then just, like, it's just like, I guess that's why he wasn't too mad about it. He's just like, hey, you never beat me, though.
But I guess, man, that's the epitome of, don't take things personal.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because if you said that in front of me where there's, like, cameras behind me, I'm like, yo, watch how the fuck you talk to me, man. You know?
Yeah. So
that was an interesting thing because everybody always talks about how Jordan's a bully and all this other stuff. And then you don't, you got to hear it to believe it. Like, even my TV blurped that out. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, but, man. It got, like, aside from looking at Jordan as the bully, this episode started to get into, like, a little bit more of a, like, emotional feel and, like, started to highlight Michael Jordan, the human, not the competitor, you know, after going into, like, Steve Kerr's life, tying it with Michael Jordan as well and how they connected on that bond, you know?
Well, technically they said that, well, they did that correlation in the documentary, but, you know, when they asked Steve Kerr about it and MJ, they were like, I mean, we never talked about it, you know?
Yeah.
That's just, you know, I guess it's like a talking point during the documentary, but during it, you know, I'm pretty sure it was still kind of, you know, open wounds for both of them. Right.
Yeah.
Even though one of, you know, Steve Kerr's father, you know, was murdered, you know, maybe 15 years prior to that or whatever the case was. And, you know, Jordan's dad, you know, was killed a few years from there at that point. But yeah, it is some it is some, like, very glaring similarities, man. Like, it would be like one day Schultz would practice, like, hey man, I heard your dad got killed. Yeah, my dad too.
You
know, like,
like, you just can't bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. How you gonna talk about it? But
you wanna have, like, a cool community thing, circle.
Yeah, but the cool thing was Steve Kerr, even though he was a role player and he knew his place, and man, MJ having that faith in him to make that final shot. You know, people always say like the Kobe's and the MJ's in the world, they want to take the last shot, right? They want to be the quote-unquote ball hogs and all that stuff, right? But when it came down to it, man, if you think about that first series with the Jazz, Steve Kerr putting the nail in the coffin.
Yeah. That's just like a random thing to hear, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it happened a lot in MJ's career, though, because they, like, showed John Paxson, too, holding it down. But, yeah, like, there's many times where, like, somebody had to, like, play that role where they had to, like, shut it down. I think a few times it was Tony Kukoc, too, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, he had to nail that final shot. But, yeah, Steve Kerr was just, like, someone that's really random that you wouldn't, like, think was going to, like, put down the whole series, you know?
Yeah, and also, you know, he's the only man in NBA history to win 4 finals in a row.
Steve Kerr?
Yeah.
Oh, that, I didn't know that, actually. That's Steve Kerr?
It's okay, so he won 3 with the Bulls, and then he won 1 with the Spurs. So that was like the Spurs' first one of their, like, long-ass dynasty, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I mean, who else? Back to back.
Some Bill Russell type person, or Robert Horry even, who, like, just, like, I guess it's always just those players that kind of, like, luck into it. It's never, like, those stars that, like, have a stat like that. It's more just someone like, oh, I just happen to be on this team at the right time kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, isn't this one dude that has, like, 7 rings, though? I always forget his name. But it's like,
I think it was Robert Horry.
Was it Robert Horry where he's, like, always at the right place at the right time?
Yeah, like, he got a few with the Lakers, the Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's so fortunate.
Yeah. It's like when you make a decision, you're like, damn, I want to win the ring, right? And then he's like, shit, I actually been going to the right places, right? And there's some other people that just, you know, never get it. Like Charles Barkley. Like, you know, you keep rolling, man, like, the dice. You're like, I'm going to get it. And then you just keep getting nothing.
Yeah, being a Phoenix Suns fan, man, I got that list of players who should have won it but just never could get there, you know?
Yeah. Well, man, I don't know, man. Booker over here too busy stealing other people's girlfriends, so he might be added to the list.
It is what it is. As long as his stats don't go down, he could do whatever he wants. he could go out in that reality show. That's risky though. That's a curse. That's a curse waiting to happen.
Oh, the Jenner curse. Yeah.
Oh man, I mean James Harden's doing all right.
But let's see. Also, you know, talk about like motivating factors. It comes to like MJ talking about his bodyguard, you know, his like security team, and one particular guy. I think his name was Gus.
Yeah, Gus Lett.
And it's interesting, you know, he was a police officer, a retired one at this point, who now became his like main bodyguard. It's like you build these sort of relationships, because it didn't seem like MJ was always out there in the public, like partying and, you know, hanging out with like flashy celebrities and stuff. I mean, he did that in the golf course. That was his way of doing it. But when it came down to it, like, he was pretty low key about it, you know, because he was always in the limelight. So it's like he liked to spend his time with people, you know, who, which is a good trait of like people who are more successful, is like you hang around people who are older, who are wiser, you know. So, and Gus was one of those people. Like, he was talking about it, like when he lost his father, he was like that one person that was always there, always giving good advice, you know, positive. And when he got hit with cancer, it was cancer, right?
Yeah,
when he got hit with cancer, he was like, now it was my turn to be there for him. And, you know, when he was in the hospital, he was there. He was at his house, like, man, you know, what other kind of bonds would be built like that, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about it.
He said it, too. He said it, too, for the Game 7 win that he got. He said that one was for Gus. That's who he wanted to win it for. And he spent so much time with him, being, like, the guy that's always there at all times for MJ. It's just like, yeah, sure, they were going to build a connection like that, especially after like such a horrific incident that happened to your father, having that one person, an old head especially, that's right there. It's just like, go and build that bond.
Yeah, man. He makes me realize, like, I got to build a bond with my dad. Got to be the one. Because it was crazy to see this giant celebrity, you know, the biggest basketball player in the world at that time. You would think he'd be hanging out with, I don't know, who's hot in the 90s, right?
Kendall Jenner.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, I don't know. You'd be hanging out with celebrities partying, but, you know, he spent a lot of time with his dad. Yeah. That was like his best friend. They'll go gambling and stuff together, you know, or whatnot. And
I mean, yeah, he man, left the game for his dad, right? Went to go play baseball because his dad loved baseball. Changed his number. Everything. The whole nine.
But that number thing didn't work out too well, as we know.
That's so wild how, like, he took off the number 45 and then all of a sudden he gets his powers back from the Monstars or whatever. Like, he just came back to being Jordan after switching to 23. Like,
hey, dude, I would have wondered, like, how pissed off would I have been if I was, like, so excited for Jordan to come back and you're just like, crap, he got a new number. And then you get that new number for Christmas or whatever the heck it is. What season it is. It would have been like spring or something, right? Because that's when he came back, like halfway through the season. So you would be like, yeah, I got the new jersey. And then all of a sudden he switches his jersey back. And your jersey is like not hot anymore. It's like, oh, crap.
Or like those overzealous fans that like they know somebody's about to come to their team in free agency. So they like buy a custom jersey with the number and their name on it. And then when they get to the team, it's like a whole different number. And you're just like, oh, man.
Now I just look like
I'm broken, bought this at the swap meet.
The bootleg jerseys. Because, you know, like, retro wasn't hot. Like, you know.
Like, yeah, it's like when LeBron went to Miami.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people didn't want their Cavs jerseys anymore. And now, if you have that Cavs jersey, it's like, cool.
OG.
You know? That concept wasn't there back then, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, even with me, I remember I got a Baron Davis jersey.
Oh, Baron Davis. And then,
like, a few weeks later, that's when he opted to sign with the Clippers. And I was just like, what the hell? We're disbanding our We Believe That Fast? Like, I was livid because I was just like, dude, I just got this.
Yeah, mine isn't as bad with my fake Todd Gurley jersey. And now he's gone.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, that was a gift, though.
Yeah, true, true, true.
You can't knock it. I mean, maybe you can knock the person for giving you a fake jersey, but it's the thought that counts, right?
No, I bought it for myself. I knew it was fake going into it, but
oh, you bought it for yourself?
Yeah, it was like $30. I was like, I ain't gonna pass up on this. It looks real.
Where'd you get it?
Hey, I ain't gonna disclose my sources, but I got it from somebody I know out here.
Okay. All right.
Got a good hookup.
I got you. Yeah, no worries. I was just thinking, like, I hope you didn't go to, like, the stores and the malls and they'd be like, yeah, man, it's real, I swear, you know.
Out in the parking lot.
Yeah. With a 45 Jordan jersey. Come on, man, I swear it's real.
Damn, man.
A Steve Kerr jersey that has 3 R's instead of 2.
Or a C instead of a K.
But I think the most iconic thing about that I want to know, did Gus pass away right after that, or, you know, they never followed up on that, so I was kind of like in suspense, like, yeah, they won it for him, all right, did he live, like, how long did he live, you know, even though you're thinking back on this was, you know, I'm terrible at time. This was, what, 20 years ago or whatnot?
Yeah, he died in 2000, so a few years after that series. But, yeah, man, I mean, I guess he was, like, diagnosed at the time, so it was just, like it was hitting Jordan hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was battling cancer for a while. So, yeah, I guess, like, Jordan found out and was just, like, motivated him to be, like, oh, this one's for Gus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this one's for Lil Saint. And you got served. But yeah, the flu game, was that also episode 9? It was, right?
Yeah, it was. Because that was the flu game. That series was actually the 97 series, the one he won for Gus. Yeah. That series was the one where he had the flu game. It was the first time they were in Utah. And the whole story just sounds hella weird. Like, Jordan's like, hey, I want a pizza. Because they're, like, all up late, right? What were they playing?
Yeah.
They were, like, gambling or something up late in his room or something?
Yeah.
They were just
hungry. And, like, he's in Utah. He don't want to go out because, obviously, he's Michael Jordan. He wants to take it easy. So he got something delivered. My thing is, I thought it was very weird, too. It seemed a little over-dramatic, over-dramatized. Like, I don't... Obviously, I'm not the one to be talking about, like, what's real and what's not when it comes to, like, playing while sick, because I'm not that type of athlete anymore. But, like, I mean, wouldn't he just be having, like, a bunch of diarrhea if it's food poisoning? Because they said it wasn't, like, a flu. It was more like food poisoning with flu-like symptoms, you know? I feel like when you get food poisoning, you're just more, like, letting everything out.
Well, that's what he said. They said that he woke up like at 2-3 a.m. He was throwing up, and then he called his trainer. His trainer came over. Like, I mean, it was probably coming out the other way too. It's just they didn't want to disclose it. You know, it's not going to be cool for TV.
But,
come on, man.
Like, for those 2 hours straight, he was okay, not letting anything out. Like, Paul Pierce left the game in the middle of a final series or playoff series to go take a shit at halftime, you know?
or whatever it was. No, I mean, you never know, dude. I mean, what's halftime, like 15 minutes?
Yeah.
That's plenty of time. That's plenty of time to come in, come out.
I just expected something like that Paul Pierce situation to happen. Like, fake an injury because you got to go take your shit or something.
But, dude, if you think about it this way, like, athletes, we have a routine. Like, all throughout high school and college, I will take two shits. I'll take two shits before every game just to make sure I flushed everything out, and then I double flushed everything out.
So you're good for the next, like, hour and a half or so, however long it takes, right?
3 hours or, you know, whatever of football that we were doing.
Yeah.
That was my little
feel it.
That was my little trick. But I mean, all that throwing up, all that dehydration, they said his fever was probably up, you know, fatigue, your whole body aches. Sometimes
that's amazing though.
Yeah, you can't focus because you become like dizzy, lightheaded. So yeah, man, I believe that. Also, you know, I don't blame him about the pizza thing because it's kind of weird, like, thinking about him being the only one that ate it. But, you know, I've been to Salt Lake City a couple times for the Sundance Film Festival. And, yeah, man, everything closes early, you know, because it is a Mormon town. It's the Mormon capital of the world, man. So it's like, yeah, you know, especially, you know, trying to find something to do on a Sunday night in Utah. That's something sounds different. So unheard, like, yeah. He's like, oh yeah, let's get something to eat. And the part that killed me was like, yeah, there was five guys that showed up to the door to deliver it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say the people who delivered it said that there is no type of tampering involved with it, but that is super sketch. Just like five people showing up, like, hey, here you go. Like, all right, who do I give my card to? My money to? Like, which one of you actually works here? Like, it's so strange. Who would do that?
that's low key. Like, don't you think of like pizza delivery cars being like little shitty cars for like two seaters with like the giant, you know, pizza sign that glows on top of the car, right? Yeah. Like, how you fit all five people in there?
They just got the peaks on their life. They probably listening to the new Vanilla Ice album.
They were probably listening to the Book of Mormon. I don't know. I don't know what they're listening to. Hymns or whatever, however you call it. But yeah, man, how much disrespect? Like, honestly, like, what do you think they probably was like, oh, damn, we got this whole bag of rotten cheese. Let me go grab it. You know, like, they grab all of that from, like, the trash. Like, how you gonna make, like, Daniel, if you had an opportunity to sabotage someone's pizza, like, what would you do to it?
Oh, man. To be honest, I don't think I'd do it, first of all, but I don't know. I don't know what it's like to work at a food joint, you know? So I don't know what, like, do they even have food that's going bad there? Like,
do they even have food that's what? They
probably got some, like, that's going bad. Like, isn't that stuff already usually thrown out? So it's kind of like, I don't know.
I've worked at some places where I see things that were dated for like 3 months ago, and I'm just like, what, you know?
And then
sometimes things get lost in the shuffle. Yeah, sometimes things get lost in the shuffle. Food has a little world, you know? Like, if you leave something out at room temperature for like the whole day that's dairy, that's already bad, you know?
Yeah.
So there's many ways that it can come about. It. You can be just dirty. They probably made the pizza with like without washing their hands, like
you gotta go to the dairy. That, like, you trying to take somebody out of a game, you gotta go for the dairy. You like put some messed up cheese up there, make sure this bread is all messed up. I don't know, man. That's what I'm thinking. It's probably the dairy that they put on there that's all just like gunky, wrong.
Yeah, they were probably.
Yeah, they knew it was going to Jordan.
Yeah, they probably were handled. They probably touched all the dollar bills that was in the cash register before. Touching the doorknobs of the pizza joint.
Man.
make it,
probably put some laxatives in there too.
Yeah,
find something.
But
yeah, 38 points. That's no joke for like a game where you're sick. Like even if it was light, severe, whatever it was, 38 points on like a healthy day is insane. But when you're sick, that's crazy.
You know what? In all honesty, I've had some like solid practices being sick. Like I get in some sort of zone where I'm like fasted or like just super fitter, where I feel super lighter and I'm just like moving like at sluggish at first, and then later on I just start picking up. So it's like,
yeah,
I've had those, and then I've also had the games where I'm just trash from being sick. So it's like it could be a hit or miss, and if you get that inner demon, that inner dog, then it's possible.
I guess too, you got something to fall back on if you play bad, you know. So you're playing with like a "I ain't got nothing to lose" type mentality, because it was also game five. They're up in the series, so it's like, if we lose the game, I got something to fall back on. I'm like, oh, I'm sick, but just knowing that there's not that as much pressure is just like kind of alleviates it a little bit. You start taking shots that you normally wouldn't hit, start hitting them because there's not as much pressure. I don't know, man. I don't know what the psychology of being sick and playing is like, but I don't know. Maybe that's something that's out there. It's just like not as much pressure because you got something to fall back on.
Yeah. But that pretty much sums it up for me in terms of this episode, man. Is there anything you want to add? I'm gonna ask you like, if you want to add anything, and then lastly, what's your favorite part of the episode?
In regards to the episode, there's not much I'd like to add. Yes, we covered a good amount of it. I'd say I'd look forward to talking about this whole NBA group stage potentially coming post-pandemic. But yeah, in regards to the episode, seems pretty solid. I say my favorite part was the Bulls Pacers, kind of like in the beginning. I don't know what it is. It's just those Eastern Conference rivalries was just like a little bit different. Even now, Eastern Conference rivalries are like just interesting to follow. You know what I mean? Like the Western Conference is just like a bunch of talented teams, but in the East, I don't know why, it just feels more personal a lot of times. So just like being able to see that with Reggie Miller, Michael Jordan, the Pacers, Larry Bird, that's just something that I'm just like always like in awe with, you know.
I think it's also because like, maybe do you get that sensation because you know if that team played in a different year, they would actually won the NBA championship, the finals.
Maybe
because if it wasn't for the Bulls, they would be the ones, you know. So that's what it's like. They're the one factor.
Yeah, because the Eastern Conference is just like they had so many players that you just like, damn. You just couldn't get over the hump, you know. Reggie Miller, what's his name? Patrick Ewing, that whole Knicks squad. It was just like the Orlando Magic. It's just like a lot of teams that are just like stopped right there. And a lot of them like genuinely disliked each other when they came up against each other. Like it was just gritty. And I just love seeing that. It's not the same as when you play like John Stockton or something.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I think my favorite part was the Gus portion, because it was nice to get like a little break about like all the NBA guys and kind of shine a little light to someone who wasn't an NBA player, but just like an average man who was just doing his job, who had this sort of adverse effect on MJ's life in a positive manner. Because, you know, we always see sometimes big stars doing the wrong things or getting into the wrong trouble because they're hanging out with the wrong crowd. But this man showed you that it's like, fuck, man, you can gain so much wisdom by just surrounding yourself with people, you know, who are older than you, yeah, who have lived experiences that's key, is lived experiences. Like, you know, they always say, like, you know, having a mentor is that step for you to avoid making mistakes that they've already made, you know, because mm-hmm. they've done it. So they're the ones advising you, you know, that you don't have to make the mistakes. So.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. Like that, like that's the main reason we watch this documentary. Is like, we're not watching it to watch these games all over again. It's like watching a movie that you already know the ending to. It's more just like you start to see the like closer details and nuances of like people's lives and what was going on behind the scenes, and you get to, like you said, shed some light on somebody like Gus, right? You just start to see a lot of like the more personable things about what was going on during that time.
Yeah, and I was rewatching some of the early episodes, and I was looking at like Jordan coming in and out of the facility, and I was looking for Gus. I was like, oh, I know who that guy is. Let me find him. But more than that, I always got that long-haired, curly, jerry-curled white dude.
Right.
He was the one that stuck out like, all the time.
Yeah. He got a unique look to him. So it's just like, of course, he's going to be the one that stands out.
Yes.
But yeah, I feel it. Every time I like think of those security guards, unfortunately, it sucks. The first thing I think of is not Gus. It's more that like one blonde dude, curly hair, like... like playing coin games with Jordan in the locker room, fueling his gambling addiction. But
hey, man, you want to bet a quick little five? But
5,000.
But they're people that could often be overlooked by like NBA players and stuff. That is like, oh, that's just the security, whatever. You know, but to know that he actually spent time with these people and actually, you know, built positive relations and didn't just, dismiss him because he was just an average worker, or stuff like that. I think that was the beauty in it. But yeah, man, if you got nothing else to say, Daniel, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up.
I mean, we just got to change this name soon to Eagle and a Pirate Under the Sun, or Eagle, a Pirate, and a Ram. I don't know, man. We got to do something.
For sure, man.
We need a rebranding.
Well, I enjoyed you on the podcast, man. Hopefully, the listeners have some good things to say, too. And, man, we'll see Corday before we wrap it all up. So, man, you want to get some insight on the argument of who's the greatest of all time. So,
man.
Daniel, man, don't give any names, but just let us know what you're thinking.
What was that last part?
Oh, I said give us a little teaser, man, but don't give out any names just so we can,
Hey, man, I don't. The thing about the GOAT conversation is I'm not the type to say this is this, this is that, like this is the for sure answer, but I just think it's much closer than what a lot of people make it out to be. But I think there's this person out in LA that puts up a strong argument. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's what I'm going to say about it.
some of y'all can already know it's Kareem.
Yup. Right. It's a Jordan Farmar or Jared Dudley, one of those.
Hey, man, we'll keep the folks guessing. So seems like Daniel's he's a homer.
Hey,
so
see this thing, you can't even say I'm home because this I hate the Lakers so much, but I can't deny greatness.
But I'm saying for this GOAT argument, you're going for the home team, even though to make it clear,
I'm going for what's
this
right.
Man's a Phoenix Suns fan.
I'm going for the person I want my child to become in the future.
Well, all right, y'all, you heard it first. Daniel, thank you for joining us on the podcast. You'll also be joining us in episode 10. So I appreciate y'all listening. Peace out.
Take it easy.